Chapter 6. Gwen. Gwen grumbled to herself as she said goodbye to the men and walked out of Howell's office. She'd promised her father that she wouldn't leave Aber. She had known before she met with Howell and Gareth what the end result would be. More and more of late, her condition was preventing her from doing what she wanted to do. It wasn't because she couldn't be as active as in the past, necessarily, and certainly Gwen cared little about what people thought. But the worst thing would be to do something strenuous and damage the baby. She would never forgive herself if she miscarried the child. The frustrating confinement of Gwen's pregnancy would be easier to accept if Mary was pregnant. Although Mary had never been as adventurous as Gwen herself, they'd kept each other company during the long summer without their men. Gareth had journeyed with Howell to Ceredigion in the south, and from the little Gareth said, Gwen knew that Howell was consumed with solidifying his hold on his lands in the wake of Cadwallader's treachery last summer. He and Gareth had fought more than one battle already in pursuit of that goal, and she was terribly afraid that they would be fighting many more. Because the Norman influence was greater in the south, most of the pressure on Howell's rule came from them, not Kadesh, the king of Dahybarth. Howell's forces had raided the Norman castle of Ebertaivi, which the Normans called Cardigan, and come away victorious, having burned the castle to the ground. The repercussions of that raid were still to be felt, which was why Howell, and Gareth, would be staying in Gwynedd for only a few months before heading south again after the Christmas feast. Gwen already felt the pang of longing at the thought of Gareth leaving again. They hadn't had enough time together. They never had enough time together. And if he left, Gareth wouldn't be with her when their baby was born. She had already been on her knees, praying for inclement weather that would prevent Howell from leaving Aber, and for the baby to come early. Gwen stopped in the corridor with one hand on the wall and the other on her belly, feeling the baby shift under her hand. Gwen could hear the hubbub in the great hall and needed to compose herself before joining it. Too many times since Gwen had discovered her pregnancy, she'd found the fear of the future engulfing her. She feared dying in childbirth. She feared Gareth's death in battle. As always, she told herself to put aside her fear, because it would prevent her from living in whatever time she had left. That, however, was easier said than done. The great hall remained nearly as full as it had been earlier that morning. Gwen didn't see Mary at the high table and stopped, unsure where she should look for her friend. Mary hadn't been sleeping in the room adjacent to Howell's office, either. Then Gwen felt a hand on her arm. Lady Gwen? It was Mary's maid, Havwen. Princess Mary asked me to tell you that she has gone to lie down in the manor house. She requests that you attend her later, but that she needs to sleep now. Gwen nodded. With the enormous crowd of people coming into Aber, Mary and Howell had already been planning to move from where they normally slept in the room adjacent to Howell's office, to the manor house, where they would be sharing a room with Gareth and Gwen. An entire family of King Owain's relations, who lived near Dol Badron, would be occupying Howell's usual chambers. Stymied for the moment, Gwen hovered on the edges of the crowded room. King Owain was holding court on the dais, for all the well-wishers who'd come for a feast but found themselves attending a funeral instead. He hadn't summoned her to him as he'd said he would, but they'd both been so busy, he hadn't had the chance. Gwen spared a thought for Tegwyn's body, lying now in the barracks, and decided she'd better stay in the hall rather than hide away there, examining what was left of the princess. The conversation among the inhabitants of Aber consisted of nothing but talk of Tegwyn. Gwen would start upon the task Howell had given her, to listen to what people had to say. The hated Cadwallader sat at one end of the dais, basking in the attention of his followers. If anything, he was growing more handsome as he aged, and no hint of baldness had yet touched his head, unlike his older brother, who was losing his blonde hair faster than it could gray. Even Christina, for all her fiery will, couldn't stop what nature had decreed. For once, Cadwallader's wife and children had accompanied him to Aber. Alice de Clare, daughter of a Norman, could have felt out of place in this very Welsh castle, but she sat beside her husband and ate her food, never a hair out of place, keeping one eagle eye on the active six-year-old, Cadvan, and the other on her one-year-old daughter, currently in the arms of her nanny. Since Howell had burned Aber Ystwyth and taken the lands for himself, at his father's bidding, Cadwallader and Alice had been living on Cadwallader's estate in Merionydd. Like Ross, it was a cantref of Gwynedd. Its proximity to Aber gave them a much shorter distance to travel for the festival. With Alice sitting beside him, a maligned wife if there ever was one, Gwen felt a little bad about hating Cadwallader as much as she did. She didn't feel so badly, however, that she wasn't looking forward to the moment Howell held out the pendant coin to him and asked Cadwallader where he'd been last night. That pleasure, however, had to be deferred until they knew more about the circumstances surrounding the disappearance, death, and reappearance of Tegwin. A pity.
I've been watching for you.
The voice came low in her ear.
What do you see? What are you looking for?
Gwen turned her head, startled to find her queen, Christina, at her side. Gwen glanced again towards King Owain, chastising herself for being so unaware that she hadn't noticed her queen's absence from the high table.
My lady, to what do I owe this honor?
Christina dismissed Gwen's obeisance with a gesture.
I may sit where I like, with whom I like. Owain doesn't like to trouble me with difficult issues these days, but I would like nothing more than to be distracted by this new intrigue. I assume you do not fear my involvement in this matter? You don't think I had anything to do with Tegwin's death, or the discarding of her body on the beach?
Of course not, my lady.
Gwen meant what she said, for once. Christina certainly wasn't gallivanting about Gwynedd last night, hauling Tegwin's body from wherever it had been hidden, and leaving it on the beach in the small hours of the morning.
How are you feeling?
As well as could be expected for a woman about to deliver her first child, Christina said. Your time will come.
Gwen bowed her head in acknowledgement of their shared experience, interested that Christina had even brought it up. Christina, however, was not to be distracted by the coming baby.
Do you think you can divert me from what I want to know, like a hapless miscreant? I am not fooled by your innocent gaze, my dear.
Gwen looked down at the trencher she didn't remember putting in front of her. Christina wasn't wrong that Gwen wanted to avoid answering her questions or giving her any substantive information, especially since Gwen hadn't yet spoken more fully with King Owain. She thought quickly as to what she could say and opted for the essential truth, even if she couldn't give Christina all of it.
The body is Tegwin's, as you know, and we are just beginning our inquiry. I can tell you little, even if Prince Howell hadn't ordered me to say nothing to anyone other than the king.
Admittedly, Prince Howell hadn't said anything of the sort, but only because he didn't have to, since Gwen already knew it. Christina leaned closer to Gwen, which wasn't easy given the size of her belly.
I am your queen.
Please, madam, I am well aware of that. Perhaps if you'd like to help us uncover the truth, you could tell me what you knew of Tegwin. I have learned already today that I knew her even less well than I thought I did.
Christina sat straighter, looking somewhat mollified.
She visited my father's house in Powys, of course.
Gwen nodded.
Mary said as much.
Her father died when she was 12, and her mother was not well born. Still, she was a princess, and my father insisted that I treat her as befitted her station. She was a sweet girl, but malleable, and she fell in love with the wrong man.
Gwen waited, but when Christina didn't continue, she made a small gesture with her hand that fell short of actually touching the queen's arm.
It would be helpful to know the truth of who she was. It will come out eventually. You know how Prince Howell gets with an investigation. He worries at it like a dog with a bone and won't let it go until he's eaten the marrow. I know.
Christina gazed towards the high table, where Cadwallader remained in close conversation with Christina's own father, Gordonwy. Gwen's father, Mylir, sat to one side of the dais with Gwokmai, tuning their instruments in preparation for entertaining the assembled throng.
It should be I who speaks to this.
King Owain sat heavily on the bench on the other side of Gwen.
I don't know anything about the Dane whom we all thought Tegwin ran off with 5 years ago, but the man she would have married instead of Bran was a man-at-arms in my father's company.
Gwen gaped at the king. She didn't know if she was more surprised to see him sitting on a bench like a commoner, or that he was willing to tell her what he knew. He wagged a finger at her.
I told you to come find me.
Gwen swallowed.
I am sorry for my lapse, my lord. With one thing and another, I hadn't yet seen my chance.
King Owain accepted her apology with a nod, and Gwen sensed that his chastisement had been no more than a formality.
I wasn't king when she had to forsake her lover for Bran, but I played a part in the decision that she do so. I should have paid more attention to my brother's only child, but I had children of my own, and, upon Cadwallader's death, a kingdom to manage for my father.
But it seems you can tell me something about this man Tegwin loved, Gwen said.
He was landless, King Owain said, with no hope of betterment and not brave, so unlikely to be knighted in battle. It was a hopeless match. Everyone but Tegwyn knew it at the time, even the man.
I guessed as much, Gwen said, and then paused, worrying that she'd been rude to the king by implying that he was telling her something she already knew. Gwen hurried on. I'm sorry for speaking so directly, my lord, but we must find him. Christina's brow furrowed. It was my understanding, my lord, that he went to Ceredigion with you after Tegwyn and Bran married, and didn't return.
He died, Gwen said, looking from Christina to the king. King Owain kept his eyes on his wife. You are correct that after Tegwyn's marriage to Bran, I made sure that her lover lived far from Rus. I sent him south to Bala, and then he stayed in Ceredigion after our victory there.
At the mention of Ceredigion, Gwen felt a prickling at the back of her neck, as if someone was watching her. She glanced towards the high table. Cadwallader was openly glaring at the three of them. She looked away, but not before King Owain had seen where her attention had gone.
Gwen, he said, a warning in his voice. What don't I know?
I am not the one to discuss this matter with you, Gwen said. Howell and Gareth are pursuing the man who brought Tegwyn to the beach. I beg that you remain patient. I believe we will have a more complete tale to tell you upon their return.
King Owain didn't look satisfied with that answer.
Don't keep me waiting too long.
No, my lord.
King Owain rose to his feet, and then reached down to take Christina's hand.
I have duties to attend to. Much can change about a man in 9 years, especially if those years are hard ones. I suggest you speak to Bricken over there.
He indicated a swarthy man on the opposite side of the hall from them.
He should have an interesting tale to tell you.
Gwen glanced over to the man, and then quickly up at the king.
Him? Are you saying...
Christina's eyes lit as she studied the soldier. He sat alone at the end of a table, shoveling food into his mouth. She leaned down and put her lips to Gwen's ear. The glee in her voice was unmistakable.
He's telling you that Bricken was Tegwyn's lover? Aren't you lucky that so many lords have come to Aber for Cullen Gaev and brought their men with them?
Gwen's breath caught in her throat, two unspoken thoughts filling her head. A shocked,
really?
And a more triumphant,
finally.
This was a piece of the puzzle Gwen had been looking for since she'd spoken with Mary, who hadn't known the man's name. Gwen wasn't sure that Christina had known it either until this moment.
If you have any kind of trouble with him, I will require him to speak to you, but I would prefer not to involve myself in this if it isn't necessary,
King Owain said.
I admit that sometimes my presence can appear heavy-handed.
That was quite an admission coming from the king, for all that he was absolutely correct. It would be far better for Gwen to try to speak to Bricken first, alone, and without undue pressure from his superiors. Being cornered by King Owain might close the man's lips over all but the most basic information. Christina and King Owain were already walking away, and Gwen didn't feel she could run after them to ask for a little more to go on, or even an introduction. She was going to have to feel her way with Bricken, and hope that he would find her less intimidating than talking to Gareth or Howell. Gwen continued to be amazed at the way interesting pieces of news could come from such unexpected places. It seemed obvious to Gwen now that while Christina had sought her out to gossip about Tegwyn, she'd been as surprised as Gwen at King Owain's subsequent forthrightness. Gwen watched Christina smile up at her husband, her expression genuinely joyful. The woman was a potent mix of contradictions. It was Gwen's experience that Christina never did anything without a reason, and one that ultimately benefited her. Gwen reminded herself to remain wary of what the benefit might be this time. She hoped that it was only that Christina liked mischief and to stir up trouble for her own amusement. If that was all this was, it would be a blessing. Meanwhile, Bricken drank deeply from the cup in front of him and rose to his feet, kicking back the bench as he did so, such that the couple on the opposite end of the bench were jerked back from the table. They glared at him, but he ignored them and strode towards the door. Gwen followed him from the hall, in hopes of catching him before he reached wherever he intended to go. She didn't want to ambush him from outside the latrines if she didn't have to. As she passed through the door to the hall, Bricken was already halfway across the courtyard, heading for the barracks. Gwen hurried to catch up.
Bricken?
She put a hand on her belly to stop it from jostling, as she hustled down the steps towards him. Though it was just noon, already two servants were trimming the ends of the torches that were set into sconces by the door to the great hall and by the gatehouse.
in preparation for lighting the moment it grew dark. One of them raised his eyebrows at Gwen, and she gave him a quick smile. She knew him, as she knew most everyone who worked at Eber. Suddenly, she wondered how many had known Bricken and Tegwin 9 years ago when they'd fallen in love, and how she might get them to speak to her about it now. Fortunately, Bricken stopped and turned at Gwen's call. He was close to the barracks, standing in the full sunlight, which continued to shine down on them and which allowed Gwen to get a good first look at his face. When King Owain had pointed him out to her, she'd seen only his profile and hadn't recognized him as someone she knew. Now, she realized that she'd seen him before. He'd been among the men in Cadwallader's company during the time that Gareth had served him, and Gwen's father had sung at Cadwallader's court at Abbot Istwyth. Bricken had left Cadwallader's retinue shortly after Cadwallader had dismissed Gareth from his service. As she'd been wallowing in her own misery at the time, she hadn't cared enough about Bricken to learn why he'd left or where he'd gone. To leave a position with a prince unless forced out like Gareth was so rare for a lowly man-at-arms as to be unbelievable. Gwen wondered if loving Tegwin had something to do with his departure, and she hoped that Bricken would tell her if her guess was true. Since he was here at Eber now, he must serve a lord who tithed to King Owain. But that lord couldn't have come often to Eber if up until a few moments ago Christina thought Bricken was dead.
"Hello, Gwen. May I help you?"
Bricken said. Gwen halted a few paces from him, surprised that he knew her. She put a hand on her chest, trying to slow her breathing. "I was hoping to talk with you a moment."
"Why is that?"
Bricken's expression became wary.
"We haven't spoken since Ceredigion."
"Seeing you in the hall brought back memories to me of that time. You served Prince Cadwallader during the year my father sang in his hall."
"You do remember me, then?"
Bricken gave a mocking laugh.
"I can't say I'm surprised it took you this long to notice me. I recognized you the moment I set foot in Eber. I hadn't realized before yesterday that you'd returned to Gwynedd, too."
The corners of his mouth turned down. Gwen shifted from one foot to the other, more than a little uncomfortable with the direction the conversation had taken. "Yes, well," she cleared her throat. "I was hoping you would answer a few questions about Tegwin."
"So that's it, is it?"
Bricken took a step backwards, his eyes flicking from left to right, as if he was looking for an escape route. Gwen put out a hand to him. "Please believe me when I say that I mean you no harm. You must have heard that Tegwin's body was left on the beach this morning. What you may not know is that she was murdered." Bricken had been retreating backwards, and now froze, one foot on the bottom step of the barracks behind him.
"You're sure?"
Gwen nodded. "Prince Howell has been charged with uncovering the truth of her death. You knew her well. The more we learn of her last days, the more likely it is that we will discover who killed her."
Bricken scoffed. "I know how royalty think. The king doesn't really want to know who killed his niece. He wants a scapegoat. If I speak to you, I'll lose my position. Again."
He backed up the steps, his hand already reaching for the latch to the door that would allow him to enter the barracks.
"I have nothing to say to you."
Gwen scurried up the steps after him and reached for his arm to stop him from disappearing through the doorway. Speaking to a man who wasn't her husband was tolerable in the castle's courtyard or hall, but she couldn't follow him into the barracks, even if Tegwin's body was only a few feet away and could provide her an excuse to be there. She could feel the watching eyes of some of the men-at-arms on duty. She needed to stop him here.
"You loved her?"
Bricken hesitated, halfway through the barracks door.
"I was warned never to speak of it."
"Who warned you?"
Bricken's lips twisted.
"Was it Bran? Or King Owain? Please know that it was King Owain himself who pointed you out to me and suggested that I speak with you."
Bricken stared past Gwen, one hand still on the latch.
"I wasn't there for her. She died, and I wasn't there."
Then he surprised Gwen by crumpling up right there in a heap on the top step, folding himself in half with his knees up and his face in his hands. Gwen wavered, uncertain what her response should be. She glanced around the courtyard as those same men-at-arms who'd been watching them with interest a moment ago looked hastily away. Bricken had come undone, and no man wanted to witness his undoing. Gwen was tempted to put a hand on Bricken's shoulder and sit beside him, but his resentful attitude of earlier made her think that he might take offense. Then Bricken spoke again, his voice choking with grief.
"Tegwin is dead, and it's my fault." Gwen moved down the steps, back to the dirt of the courtyard, in order to stand in front of him. She leaned forward to whisper to him, "How is it your fault?"
"She came to me and begged me to take her away from Gwynedd, but I wouldn't. I couldn't."
Bricken put his face back in his hands. His tears were making Gwen even more uncomfortable than his earlier frankness about the fact that she hadn't noticed him. She wanted to get him out from under the eyes of everyone else in the courtyard, but felt equally awkward about dragging him towards a more private location. Finally, she gave in to instinct and sat beside him on the step, turning resolutely away from the two men crossing the courtyard from the postern gate. They had been heading towards the barracks, but at the sight of Bricken's tears and Gwen patting his shoulder, they abruptly changed direction. She felt like crying too, just witnessing Bricken's despair. Fortunately, before anyone else could come out of the barracks or enter them, Bricken gathered himself, wiping at his cheeks with the heels of his hands and clearing his throat.
"I'd best be off."
He stood abruptly. Gwen rose to her feet with him.
"Oh, no, you don't. You can't leave it like that."
Bricken's grief had been tumultuous, but now he looked mutinous, with his chin sticking out and defiance in his eyes. Gwen had a moment of panic that he really was going to leave it like that, because she didn't know what else she could say to him to convince him to keep talking to her. She understood that he was embarrassed to have been seen crying. Many men would have, even if Welshmen allowed their emotions to show more than other people's, like the Normans or Danes. On the other hand, Irishmen, in Gwen's experience, cried openly and often, with no compunction about it whatsoever. Whether he saw the understanding in Gwen's face, or simply decided that Gwen was going to hound him until he talked, Bricken's expression softened. As Gwen gazed up at him, he wiped at his cheeks one more time and tipped his head towards the stables, striding away without waiting to see if Gwen would follow. Gwen lifted the hem of her skirt and scuttled after him. Once inside the door, Bricken stopped. He peered around the darkened stables. What little light to see by filtered through the four open doorways. At night, a man had to bring a lantern inside in order to see. But the danger of fire was ever present, and everyone made do without real light the best they could during the day.
"No one can hear us now," Gwen said.
Bricken grunted his agreement. They did appear to be out of earshot of the handful of stable boys hard at work cleaning out horse stalls, as well as out of sight of anyone in the courtyard. Bricken ran his hands through his hair and then paced three times around the little space by the doorway between a mound of hay and the first stall.
"I loved her. I did. And she loved me. She was only 15. Christ, I can't believe that was nearly 10 years ago. And we had only a few weeks together before her grandfather promised her to another man."
"To Bran, son of the Lord of Ross," Gwen said.
"Yes," Bricken said. "It was a fine match, of course, appropriate for her station. She should never have even looked at me."
"How did you meet?" Gwen said. "She was a princess."
"And I was a lowly man at arms."
Bricken nodded.
"She was a wild one, that girl. She loved horses, and it always seemed that I was in the stables when she was there. I'd been sent to Dorwithelen by the king, you see, stationed there as part of Gwynedd's defenses. It's a small castle, and there's not much besides herding sheep to entertain a young girl. I see now that her interest in me was all my fault. I should never have let her know how I felt about her. When I learned that she was to marry Bran."
"That must have been hard," Gwen said.
This was an old story, but no less heartbreaking in the telling.
"It split me apart to let her go."
"But you did let her go?" Gwen said.
Bricken nodded.
"I told her that I couldn't be with her anymore, and that I was leaving so she could marry Bran with honor. We never lay together then, I swear it."
"What did she say in return?"
"When she found out about the wedding and to whom she'd been promised, she asked me to run away with her. But I couldn't, could I? She was 15. I was 20, with no money or land. I was a poor soldier serving King Owain's father, and lucky to have the position. It didn't matter that her father had died, and that Owain was now the heir to Gwynedd. She was still a princess."
"What happened then?"
Gwen found herself hanging on his words, envisioning a stable much like this one, and a young girl being told she couldn't have the man she loved. Gwen had been that girl. She knew what Tegwyn had felt.
Bricken shrugged. "Nothing happened. She married Bran.
I served King Griffith as I had since I was 14. My life and hers went on apart from one another. I know her grandfather thought he was doing right by her, giving her to Bran.
It would have seemed a good match, Gwen said.
Nobody cared that she didn't love him. Nobody expected her to love him when they married. Her grandfather even told her that love was for herders and peasants, not princesses.
I imagine that everyone else told her she would grow to love him, Gwen said.
Rickon looked down at his feet.
Why wouldn't she have? He was rich and handsome.
And did she grow to love him? Gwen said.
She did, or as much as he would let her.
Mary had said as much, but Gwen was glad to have it confirmed. And since it was Bricken saying it, likely it was true.
She was full of love, that girl. She forgot me, as I hoped she would, and gave the love she'd had for me to him. But it wasn't returned. He was rich and spoiled, as these men often are. When she didn't bear him a son, he lost whatever interest in her he'd had up until that point. 2 daughters in 3 years she gave him.
Rickon's voice faded away.
When did you find her again? Gwen said.
I didn't. After I left Cadwallader's service.
He gave Gwen a sharp look.
You do remember me leaving?
I do. You left not long after Gareth had been sent off. I didn't ever find out why, though.
Rickon waved a hand.
Ugh, it's water under the bridge now. I was one of the ones who obeyed when Gareth did not. But every man has a soul, even if it takes him a long while to discover it. I left Ceredigion and came back to Aber in hopes that I could serve a different lord, even King Owain, now that his father was dead. I hoped that enough time had passed that my transgressions could be forgiven.
And were they? He found a place for you, Gwen said.
He did, Bricken said. Since Tegwyn had been several years married by then, the past seemed of little importance to anyone but me.
Gwen eyed him as he stopped his story again.
And Tegwyn, perhaps?
She sought me out.
When was this? Gwen said.
Some 3 years after her marriage. That would have been after the wars in Ceredigion and the death of the old king. King Owain sat on the throne. Only a few had known about us the first time, and we did everything we could not to cause gossip now.
Except not see each other?
Except that.
Gwen had vivid memories of that time. Gareth had been dismissed in early summer of that year, and Bricken had left before winter closed the roads. She had another question to ask, but couldn't figure out how to ask it delicately, so she just said,
You became lovers.
I never touched her before her marriage. She went to Bran's bed a maiden. But she had grown into a woman, a very unhappy one, and I was weak.
He looked away.
We met when we could, in a little house to the west of here. Prince Cadwallader's it was, but as he was in Ceredigion, I didn't much worry that anyone would find us. Cadwallader used it for his own trysts. I saw no reason not to use it for mine.
Gwen didn't want to interrupt the flow of his conversation, but the mention of the house had her pulse racing.
What house was this?
Bricken threw out his hand to indicate beyond the Aber River.
It lies to the south of the road to Penryn. A strange one, built right into the side of a hill.
I'm sorry, but did you say that Cadwallader used it for trysts? Gwen said.
Bricken lifted one shoulder.
He could be found there in the evenings, whenever he left his wife in Ceredigion and came north. It was common knowledge among the men, because some of us had to accompany him and then escort the girl home afterwards.
That was more about Cadwallader's activities than Gwen had ever wanted to know, but she was sure that Howell and Gareth would be interested to learn of it. Gwen knew the hut in question, though it had belonged to someone else when she was a girl.
Back to Tegwyn. When was the last time you saw her?
She came to me 2 weeks before she disappeared, and told me that she was with child, and it was mine,
Bricken said.
Her husband had been absent for much of the spring, and had sported more with other women than with her. He would know that the child wasn't his.
She was sure it was yours, Gwen said.
We were sure. She asked again for me to take her away. I wanted to.
Bricken clenched his hands into fists.
But I was a coward. I needed more time to think about where to go and how we would live. She'd caught me at a bad time for making any decision, too. I had come to Eber only because my lord was one of King Owain's captains, and he sent me home with a message for Lord Taran. The war in England was newly started, and King Owain decided to gain himself some territory at the expense of a few marcher barons he thought needed reining in. I put Tegwyn off with excuses and told her that I would come to Ross before the end of the month. That would have been April.
But you didn't, Gwen said. Brickin's eyes skated away and didn't return to Gwen's face.
I never intended to, and I never saw Tegwyn again. I visited Eber a few months later, but she'd already run off with that Dane.
What did you think about that? Gwen said.
I assumed that since I'd refused her, she'd found another man to take her away, Brickin said. It made perfect sense. I was happy to believe it, because it meant that she had a better man than I or Bran to care for her.
What about the child?
A Dane would have raised her child as his own. That's the Danish way, and I would have honored him for it.
Do you think Bran ever suspected that you and Tegwyn had renewed your attachment?
Brickin shook his head forcefully. Not unless she told him.
Gwen canted her head. Would she have told him?
She might have, if she was angry enough, or had been drinking enough.
Brickin made a mournful face as Gwen's eyes went wide.
The truth is, I knew how unstable she was. It was part of the reason I was reluctant to take her away.
Which is why you thought her running away with a Dane was well within her character, Gwen said.
Brickin nodded. But now, I wonder if he ever existed at all.
To Gwen's mind, everybody should have been wondering that by now. Given the condition of the body, she'd been dead a long while. Did it make sense that her new lover would have killed her within days of sailing off with her, and then left her body somewhere near Eber? Gwen shook her head. Nothing about this death made sense.
I have told you the truth.
Brickin looked directly into Gwen's face. Perhaps confused by Gwen's head shaking and thinking that she didn't believe him. Thank you for talking to me. I will make sure that both Prince Howell and King Owain are aware of your willingness to help.
I should have taken her away.
Brickin's face crumpled, and he pressed his fingers to the corners of his eyes.
I should have protected her.
Gwen put a hand on his arm. Do you know something about her death beyond what you've already told me? I thought you were in Powys when she disappeared.
I was in Powys, but I have no doubt at all who is responsible for her death. Lord Bran must have found out about the baby and killed her.